You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Although it's become a taboo practice, for hundreds of years the hunting of whales was a major industry in this country, and whale oil and baleen were mainstays of the U.S. economy. In his latest book, Leviathan, The History of Whaling in America, Eric J. Dolan presents the stories of the whalers who risked their lives in the thrill of the hunt. They were called Iron Men in Wooden Boats, and their impact on America's future as an industrial nation. It's published by Norton. I'm very pleased that it brings Eric J. Dolan to my show today. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Now, Herman Melville wrote, "To produce a mighty book, you must choose a mighty theme." Is that why you chose whales as your theme here?
Yes. When I started to think about the book, I didn't know a lot about whaling. In fact, one of the only things that I did know is having read Moby Dick in high school, not having enjoyed it too much. But then after going to a local library and reading more about whaling, I discovered how amazing of a thread of American history whaling is. Had an enormous impact on the economy, both the colonial economy and that followed. I mean, just before the American Revolution, there were 360 whale ships leaving from colonial ports. And if you fast forward 50 or 60 years, whaling was the third largest industry in Massachusetts and the fifth largest in the United States.
You mentioned that Captain John Smith led one of the first, though unsuccessful, whaling expeditions in America. Why was he interested in hunting whales in New England?
Well, whale oil was a very valuable commodity in Europe for hundreds of years before Captain John Smith came over to America. And his backers had hoped that he would harpoon a number of whales and bring back a hold full of oil because it was such a valuable commodity. He saw plenty of whales. He was unable to harpoon any. And the thing that fascinated me most about that voyage is what he wrote 10 years later in one of his journals. He said that had he and his men killed some whales, he had planned to stay in the colonies, well, not the colonies yet, stay in America with 10 of his men and establish a foothold for a colony. And the mind sort of reels to think how American history would have changed had John Smith caught some whales. Plymouth Rock would be just that, a rock.
Because he led the pilgrims on the Mayflower instead. Were whales rare in the Atlantic waters closer to England? Is that why he was in? Because there are whales to the north, aren't there?
Oh, no, there were plenty of whales, and there was an active whaling industry throughout Europe, the Basques, the English, the Flemish, Germans. But the Basques and other fishermen, including English fishermen, had been searching for cod for many years off of New England, and they saw huge numbers of whales swimming in the waters. So it was a logical conclusion to go across the Atlantic and try to bring some of that whale oil back.
Native Americans hunted whales in the Northwest. Did the ones who lived on the East Coast also whale?
There's no really good evidence, and what I conclude in the book is that we don't know if they did, but that doesn't mean they didn't. The written accounts are very few, and it is a little bit puzzling that after the pilgrims got here and other colonists that there are no records of Native Americans actually getting into their canoes, going out to meet whales in their own element and attacking them. But having said that, Native Americans did take advantage of whales that washed ashore, drift whales, for hundreds, if not thousands of years before Westerners arrived on the shores of America.
And then there were ordinances that governed those drifted whales,
right,
enacted.
Yeah, you could tell that whaling was becoming a major endeavor when the government started regulating, and it began actually here on Long Island in Southampton. In 1644, they set up a system where people were supposed to be on the lookout for whales and report them to the authorities. And if they didn't report the whale washing ashore to the proper authorities in time, they could be fined.
Now, what were whales being used for in those days? Eventually, I know whales, there wasn't a part of the whale that wasn't adapted to something.
Right.
But at this point, what was it, mostly the meat?
No, well, in Europe, yes. In Europe, meat was a major commodity. Whale meat was a major commodity, courtesy of the Catholic Church. They had decreed that its followers couldn't eat red-blooded meat or hot meat on holy days, 166 days out of the year. And even though whales are mammals and swim under the water, they were deemed to be cold.
But maybe people didn't know they were mammals at that point.
No, they didn't. And Meat was eaten a lot in medieval Europe, but also whale oil was used as an illuminant. It was called lumera, and that was the main commodity from whales at that time. Also, baleen, to a certain extent, was used to make the hoops in hoop skirts and stays or busks in corsets.
When did whale ambergris become a source of perfume?
Well, actually, that was probably almost 1,000 years or more ago. Somebody, I don't know how they figured this out. It's always amazing to me how people figure out you can eat certain things or use it for certain purposes. But ambergris, this waxy substance.
Smells awful, I gather.
No, sometimes it doesn't smell at all. It can smell. It is a byproduct of irritation in a sperm whale's bowel, and it is defecated. It floats on the sea. It's a very waxy material, and somebody many, many years ago discovered that if you flaked it off and mixed it with perfume, it would lengthen the fragrance, the time that the perfume would smell.
My guest is Eric J. Dolan, his latest book, Leviathan, The History of Whaling in America. What was the procedure for capturing a whale in the early days?
Well, it depends on where it took place. Shore whaling, which is very close to shore, people would be on the beach and they would be looking out for a whale. If a whale came into the bay, they would yell whale off or whale in the bay, and they'd hop into their 26-foot whale boat, go out through the surf, chase the whale, harpoon it, drag it back to shore. Later, when offshore whaling took precedence over shore whaling, they were out on ships for up to a year, maybe 4 years at a time during the Golden Age, and there would be men 100 feet above the deck looking out 8 or 10 miles to the horizon for spouting whales. They saw one, they would yell blows or thar she blows. Down the whale boats would go, the men would jump into them, and they'd be off. Once they found a whale and harpooned it, the proverbial Nantucket sleigh ride would take place, with the boat being barreling along the surface of the water after the struck whale. And finally, when the whale tired, they would pull up very close would the black skin, and they'd take these very sharp lances and thrust them into the side of the whale, looking for the life of the whale, the lungs or a knot of blood vessels, and success would show itself as a geyser of blood coming out of the blowhole.
And then they would take it on the ship and break it apart.
Right. They would take it back to the ship, and they would begin the cutting in process, and they would strip the blubber off, sort of like peeling an apple in one continuous strip.
But didn't the meat go bad?
Well, actually, Americans never got a real taste for whale meat. So the Yankee whalemen, even from the very beginning in the 1600s up through the end of the industry in the early 1900s, Americans rarely ate whale meat.
Why did America merge to become the major whaling country rather than an older naval power like Great Britain?
Well, it was a great frustration to Great Britain that they weren't better whalemen, especially in the colonial days, and they had to rely on the Americans for much of their whale oil and baleen. And among the reasons were that whaling, people that settled in America had an entrepreneurial spirit. They wanted to make a go of it. They found whaling to be a lucrative enterprise, and there were plenty of trees and other materials, the raw materials they needed to make the ships, and they had plenty of men to man the boats. And then once the Nantucketers got involved, especially the Quakers with a vengeance, they just were excellent businessmen, and they made a real go of the business.
Nantucket, which is this tiny island, became the source of whaling for a while. Later, New Bedford, Mass. Why that island? And can you explain why Nantucket thought of seceding from the colonies during the Revolutionary War?
Well, the reason that Nantucket became such a whaling powerhouse is they lived on a small island, and they had to figure out a way to earn a living. The soil was relatively depleted in terms of nutrients. They didn't have a large agricultural base. And the Indians, the Wampanoags, who lived on the island, had been drift whaling for many years. And so they latched on to that and quickly found that selling whale oil on the mainland and then transporting it to Europe was a very lucrative business, and they pursued it with a vengeance. The entire island became a company town, and whaling was its goal. And the reason that Nantucket wanted to secede is during the American Revolution, whaling came to a standstill. It was very dangerous to go out in the seven seas and with Her Majesty's Navy there and possibly attacking you. And so they tried to negotiate with the British and then the Americans to get passports to go whaling without being molested. And one of the options was to secede or declare their neutrality from America as a way of avoiding attack from the British.
And allowing them to continue trade with the British,
right,
who wanted all of this, the stuff that the whales brought. At a certain point, the whales in the Atlantic seemed to disappear, didn't they? But some environmentalists think it's not because they'd been hunted out, but because they had figured out what was going on.
Well, nobody really knows. I mean, there's definitely with right whales in the North Atlantic, there are only about 300 to 350 of those left today in that population. And there's absolutely no doubt that whaling, and in large part American whaling, caused a great reduction in the population, and it's almost near extinction. But there also are theories that some of the whales, after they were hunted so aggressively for many years, shifted their migratory routes. I don't think we actually know the answer to that question.
What about the sailors? There must have been a lot of downtime between sightings of whales. What did they do?
Well, during the Golden Age, the average voyage was 4 years in length. And even if they had a greasy or a successful voyage, they had months, sometimes as much as a year, of downtime when they weren't processing whales. And they did scrimshaw, they sang shanties, they had gams when they came upon other whale ships, and they'd exchange crew and discuss what they'd been doing and memories of home. They'd write in journals. There are thousands of journals that remain from whalemen who were trying to pass the time.
And you say there was a golden age. When was that?
The golden age ramped up right after the War of 1812 and lasted through the mid to late 1850s.
And then the Civil War had an effect.
Civil War had a huge effect. And it was a golden age. It's what Melville wrote about in Moby Dick. And it was truly a golden age. In 1846, there were 735 American whale ships out of a total of 900 worldwide.
Was the problem after the Civil War that the ships became vulnerable to both sides, or because other things were being developed? Petroleum was discovered, wasn't it? Kerosene.
Right. The whale oil industry was really knocked out of the box, so to speak, in 1859 when Colonel Edwin Drake discovered petroleum in Titusville, Pennsylvania. All of a sudden, there was a plentiful and cheap source of kerosene, and people traded in their whale oil lamps for ones that were illuminated with kerosene.
Were the crews a mixed race? Were there Native Americans, blacks, as whites?
In the early years, Native Americans, when they were more plentiful, provided an incredible labor force for whaling industry up through the mid-1700s. And then later on during the Golden Age, whale ship was like a United Nations of nationalities.
In the 1860s, Sven Foyn, a Norwegian, developed an explosive-tipped harpoon. Right. Why didn't the American whalers adopt it?
Some American whalemen did use the new armaments that were available to them towards the end of the 1800s, but American whalemen had grown accustomed to the harpoons and lances that they had been using for many decades and were slow to give those up, and in many cases they didn't give them up. And even up until the early 1900s, people were still using hand jettisoned harpoons.
And you end the story in 1924. Why then?
Because that's basically the end of the great era of American whaling. There was plenty of whaling that took place after that time, but in August 1924 is when the Wanderer, the last wooden whale ship, went to sea. After that time, it was other countries such as Japan, England, and Norway, Iceland, that had these factory whale ships, which were made out of steel and had spotter planes. It was a whole different industry.
And they still continue to argue for a return to whaling, despite the fact that many people consider it a hateful practice.
Right.
Are Americans still engaged in whaling?
No. Americans.
I know it's against the law, but that doesn't mean that people
don't
do things.
There's an exception for Eskimos, or the native tribes up in Alaska. But beyond that, there are no American whale ships right now.
Now, you've written about environmental subjects in the past. Do you consider this book to be an environmentalist book? Or just a straight history?
It's more of a history. It was like a history of American history using whaling as a narrative backbone. I don't know if I would say it's an environmentalist book. It's about an environmentally related topic, and it had a big influence on why today we're spending so much energy on trying to save the whales and bring them back and take them off the endangered species and threatened species lists.
Eric J. Dolan's latest, Dolan, by the way, is spelled D-O-L-I-N, his latest book, Leviathan, The History of Whaling in America, published by Norton. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.